This is the Big Kim Morning Show. Thank you for choosing us. And if you're back now with the kids in school, we appreciate it. We got you covered. Larry Richard with our anchor man, Paul Rasmussen. You know, yesterday I was up driving to Ridgeway, Pennsylvania, Paul, and went through, they used to have a big glass plant up there and just to the south.
Where's Ridgeway?
Rockway. If you went I-80, basically almost to Brookville, then you go north for about 30-some miles. That's Ridgeway. There's St. Mary's, PA.
I got you. Yep.
Johnsonburg, and then Rockway Glass, or is it? It was an Owens Corning plant there. Anyway.
That's right.
You know where?
Or Anchor Hawking, one of the two, right?
Yeah. The glass center of, really, for many years, was the south side of Pittsburgh. Did you know that?
I did.
Yeah, and one of the families. And Marty and I have talked to Rich Chupko for, you know, the last couple of years, and he joins us from the south side. Rich, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, your family's been in the business since the turn of the last century down there, right?
Yeah, 1908, Larry.
And it used to be the glass center of the region, and maybe one in all of America at one point. Anyway.
True.
So... yeah. We have heard recently, Rich, and the reason we ask you talk to you today, there was a report last week that they've cleaned up the south side. So I wanted to just check in with you and see where we stand. And since you're there in the heart of it, and you've been very vocal about this, what is your evaluation of where the south side is right now?
Well, the only thing that's done is shootings. Everything else is still chaos. Last week we had an 82-year-old woman beat up, assaulted by a homeless man, 3 broken ribs, broken pelvis, not arrested. They find him the next day, or 2 days later, at the Ormsby Park, around all the young children. And so the most vulnerable people are the ones that are at risk because of the... low staffing of the Pittsburgh police. You know, the 82-year-old woman is living at 22nd and Carson. Ormsby's right off of Carson. And this homeless person assaulted her. He stabbed somebody in the eye a week prior. And then and then the police find him at Ormsby Park, right by the south side, right where that lady was assaulted at.
So... you said he was arrested but released?
They called the paramedics. The people at the park ID'd him, and I don't know how or why he's not behind bars.
So what do you think is the disconnect? Because we have heard that there have been a lot of improvements with patrols on the south side. That's what the general public's been hearing.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's what everybody says, but I always tell the people that say this, let's have a meeting at midnight on 15th and Carson, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday nights, and then we'll get the true narrative of what Southside is like.
And is it mostly, Rich, confined to those weekend nights, the trouble?
Well, it's Thursday through Sunday, it's 4 out of 7 days, yeah.
And do you still have, and I would imagine you do, now that college is back in session, you've got Pitt, Carnegie Mellon, Duquesne, everybody comes to the south side for the weekend partying, right?
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
So I know because you've been so vocal that you take a lot of criticism by people down there. They don't want this kind of reputation. They're trying to work hard to change the narrative. So... what do you say when you talk to the police?
Well, I mean, if you want to change the narrative, you have to change the truth. You know, when the police chief and the mayor come to Southside and tell us that crime's going down, and then you use their statistics to show them it is not, you know, the chief was down in May, and I showed him the heat map of Pittsburgh violent crimes, and I asked him if it was his, you know, if it was the city of Pittsburgh's heat map, he said, yeah. And I said, well, 22% of all violent crimes happen between 2 a.m. and 7 a.m., exactly the time when you want to have least amount of police on the streets. And then he looked at the map. He gave it back to me. He says, these numbers don't seem correct. I'll get back to you. And he never got back to me.
So you need a follow-up from him on that. And what about, Rich, the overall conditions for the homeless?
I mean, there's homeless everywhere in Southside and Pittsburgh. My friend's daughter's on the track team at Shadyside Academy, and she used to run down by the river, but she's not allowed to do that anymore because the homeless have taken over that whole area down there, and there's needles and drugs and attempted abductions and rapes, along the river, which is terrible.
And what do you say, Rich, when people say, that's just Rich again, sounding off?
I mean, all you have to do is watch TV and read the paper to see, or just come. That's why, like I said, come to Southside at midnight, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday nights on 15th Street. And then after that, we could talk about the narrative of Southside.
Well, again, all the colleges are back in, and they frequent the South Side, so you want it to be safe for your college students to go anywhere in the city. Appreciate the update, man. Hang in there.
Thanks, Larry.
All right, Rich Chupka on the South Side on the Big K Morning Show. Looking for our hometown heroes. Nominations coming to a close here, so go to kdkradio.com and look up the nomination page, and once you do, you also see that Jim Leland is going to be our featured Lifetime Achievement Awardee. This is Tuesday, October 8th at the Lamont.
And what he had to say over the weekend during the induction ceremony over at PNC Park is memorable. Really, really touching.
Yeah, I thought it was significant weekend. Certainly, it's been a huge year for Jim Leland, who also was inducted into Major League Baseball's Hall of Fame in Cooperstown this summer. And he's going to turn 80 this year, I understand. His son's getting married, as Lanny Terry told us. And by the way, Lanny is going to be there. He's going to actually introduce Jim that night for us.
Well, that's a perfect way to do it. Hey, by the way, about the event itself, the Pirates induction for their new Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
My favorite picture that I saw of all of those was Barry Bonds and Jim hanging out in a golf cart together.
Yeah.
And having a conversation. It was just, the picture said everything.
They're great friends, and they won a lot of games together. And Jim Leland said that Barry Bonds is the most talented player he's ever managed, wherever he has managed, not just Pittsburgh, but Detroit, the Marlins. People forget he left here, won a World Series with Miami. Of course, Barry Bonds went on to great fame and some misfortune, but he was all smiles. He got a nice reception.
I'm glad the detractors got a chance, if they were paying attention. I'm glad that his detractors got a chance to see that he's not what some people made him out to be.
And we're going to talk to John Parado, who's an insider baseball. We call him Johnny Baseball, coming up.
Well, after you've interviewed him a couple of times, I now subscribe to what he writes for a couple of places.
Yeah,
he's one of the first guys I go to read about the Pirates.
Speaking of which, Mark Cabali, who covers the Steelers here, did you see what happened to him?
Yeah, he was with the Athletic, and they let him go, and then he fell right on his feet. He got hired by Pat McAfee.
Pat McAfee, who's arguably one of the most recognized now, especially for college games, because he's still going to host College Game Day, but he's a Plum High School kicker who went on to the NFL fame with the Colts.
Didn't have any kind of he had no ordinary career with the Colts, by the way. He was a standout. I mean, big personality.
And he also played at West Virginia. I mean, he kicked for the Mountaineers.
Oh, there's that too, right.
And then he really gained a lot of notoriety and fame when he started interviewing Aaron Rodgers on a regular basis, because Aaron is so, let's say, eclectic, that it drew a lot of attention.
Yeah, if you ask Aaron a question, you don't know what direction he might come from on it with the answer, do you?
Yeah. And so this kind of separated him, and then he got this big job with ESPN, and he's doing all these podcasts, TV.
I will occasionally watch a little bit of him on ESPN.
Well,
it's never boring.
What's cool about Pat McAfee for us is the fact that being a Pittsburgh guy, like, last week he talked about Kennywood again, with Mark Cabali, who he just hired. And Mark, good for him. Good for Mark.
I'm delighted to hear that. The Athletic, for me at least, the Athletic was something that I was subscribing to briefly, and then they dropped coverage of a couple of sports that I follow, and I just decided that I'd kind of move away and found out that they're involved with the New York Times.
And Pat McAfee,
not a plus for me,
also did a whole bit on Myron Cope, which I thought was terrific.
He did.
Yeah, saying that growing up, he thought he was the best color analyst because it was just all about fun.
Is this circulating on social media by any chance?
Yeah, if you search, in fact,
McAfee Cope, I'll probably find something.
But the reason I bring it up is because these are the guys like Mark Cabali that we know here in Pittsburgh.
He's a regular guy.
Yeah, good guy. And same with John Parrotto, Johnny Baseball. Johnny Baseball. You know what I saw at this memorabilia museum yesterday? A Vin Scully autographed microphone from Dodger Stadium. And Vin did 67 years as the voice of the Dodgers. Started when they were still in New York.
That's right. They were the Brooklyn Dodgers, right?
And moved all the way out to the left coast. And what is remarkable to me is that he spent most of his career as a solo act.
He did not have a color commentator.
And think of the Pirates, for instance. So they have Greg Brown and Joe Block, who share play-by-play duties, TV, radio, and they rotate. And then you have this whole list.
Like a half a dozen experts they bring in now.
Right, including Bob Walk, who's been doing it for a long time, Pirate pitcher. You know, obviously everybody here knows Bob Walk. And The Rock from Carrick, John Wehner.
You know, I was watching a recent Pirates telecast, and they were talking about the Hall of Fame. I forget which day it was. It might have been yesterday, for all I remember. But they had Teak in the booth with them.
Oh, yeah.
It was good to see him.
And at one point, on Saturday, they had Jim Leland.
Oh, up in the box.
Yeah, in the booth.
Slick.
On the air.
I must have missed that.
You want to hear my Jim Leland?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm happy to accept this. I love that guy, man. I am so thrilled to have him as our Lifetime Achievement Awardee for our Hometown Heroes event. By the way, tickets go on sale today. You can get them at kdkradio.com.
So if we were going to pick out like a list of a dozen people who we would want to represent Pittsburgh, if they were having a show about these people are all about Pittsburgh, he'd be one of them.
Well, yeah, Jim Leland, yeah, 100%. Love the guy.
Thanks to the late Sid Thrill and Mac Prime for believing in a no-name minor league manager. And I'll never forget the headlines when I came to Pittsburgh. They read Jim who? Over time, we improved our product, and we became a force in the National League East, winning 3 straight division titles. I know we also broke your heart along that way. To be on this wall with the greats, like Clemente and Stargell and Maz, and my 2 friends, Steve Blass and Kent Tekulve, is an honor that a man could never imagine. And today, I'm going in with 2 more Pirate legends, Manny Sanguian and my friend, and the best baseball player I ever managed, the great Barry Bonds. And we're back together again. This is a special day from a special organization and from very special people. Thank you very much.
Pirates and Major League Baseball Hall of Famer Jim Leland, Saturday after the induction that included, as he mentioned, Barry Bonds and Manny Sanguian, and joining us from Pittsburgh Baseball Now is our Johnny Baseball, John Parrotto. John, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. How are you?
I'm good. They capped that great ceremony on Saturday with a series win and a dramatic walk-off yesterday. So 3 out of 4 from Cincinnati from the practical side. But let's talk about the emotional side and what that meant. Obviously, it meant the world to Jim Leland. And Barry Bonds looked happy.
Yeah, how about that? Never saw that much in the 7 years he played for the Pirates, even though you know, for most of them, he's one of the best players in baseball. But I think he was touched. And I think, you know, he's 60 years old now, so he has a lot more perspective on life than when he did when he played here in Pittsburgh in his 20s. And I think he realizes, you know, it's nice that you're forever remembered as one of the best players in franchise history. And he did genuinely seem humbled and touched by the fact that the Pirates did induct him. And it was really nice to see.
John, Paul Rasmussen here. I'm curious to know how much you met him. I mean, how well did you know Jim Leland?
Well, I covered him his last 5 years in Pittsburgh from 88 to 92 when I began my baseball writing career at the Beaver County Times. So I got to know him pretty well, and, you know, we saw each other over the years when he played for the Giants, and, you know, a couple times after he retired, ran into him here or there. So, you know, at the time I got to know him fairly well, and, you know, I saw both sides. I saw the angry man with the chip on his shoulder side. But I also saw another side of him, Paul, who was very, very, very intelligent, could give you very good answers, break down questions that you have and give really good answers, articulate, really a hitting savant, truly, truly understood the art of hitting as much as anyone I've ever met in 37 years of covering baseball. So, you know, it wasn't always the bad side that the public saw so often. Barry could also be a very, very gregarious at times and very charming when he wanted to be.
We're with John Pirano from Pittsburgh Baseball Now. John, I thought Barry got a nice warm reception in Pittsburgh, and I'm sure that there was some anxiety on his part of how he would be received, but it looked like it was a great moment.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, I didn't hear any boos from my vantage point up at the very top of the stadium in the press box, and there were almost I guess 36,000 people, 37, whatever the total attendance was. And, you know, I mean, after he gave his brief speech to the crowd, you know, he started chanting Barry, Barry, Barry. And I didn't expect that to happen. I thought he would get a good reception. I mean, he was a great player here, and it was quite the honor that they were giving him. But I didn't think he would get booed off the field, but I also thought it would be more of a polite ovation rather than a rather rousing ovation, which was, I think you could tell by the look on his face, it made him feel good, because I think deep down he wasn't sure either exactly how he'd be received, even after all these years.
And how about Manny Sanguian? Is there a more affable, likable guy that's ever played baseball in Pittsburgh?
Never. You know, I was talking to some of the younger writers on Saturday after the ceremony, and I said, you know, he may be the most popular figure as far as beloved as anybody in Pirates history, because, you know, he's been with the franchise. He came up in 67 when was first season in the big leagues. He played all those years, and then he stayed around. And when PNC Park opened, they started the barbecue stand with him and beyond the batter's eye in center field. And he just sits there and regales people the entire night. And I think almost every Pirate fan feels, not only do they like Manny, but they feel like they know him, like he's a friend of theirs, because they've interacted with him at least once. And he's such a great guy, such a charismatic guy, just a happy person, just a very upbeat all the time with a lot of energy. And I do think he just connects so well with people that there's been nobody in Pirate history who's been more beloved than him.
I remember Manny Sanguian and the Pittsburgh Pirates of the late 1970s, because that's when I was really getting into baseball. And I have to say that as a baseball fan, I started following the Bucks from that point on. And it was kind of a long wait. What Jim Leland, getting back to Jim, what he means to the city and baseball fans here. It's been a long wait even now.
Well, you know, he came into a very difficult situation after the 85 season. The Pirates had lost over 100 games. He'd had the federal court, the Pittsburgh drug trials, there had been a lot of talk the Pirates might move in 85. The Galbraith family was looking to sell the team, and you know, they were having a hard time finding somebody that wanted to buy the team and keep it in Pittsburgh, and they were started to explore their options with owners from other cities. So, I mean, he comes in here, takes over a bad team, takes over a franchise on extremely shaky ground at the time, which, you know, the public-private consortium bought the team, led by Dick Caligiuri, the Pittsburgh mayor at the time, and saved the team. And, you know, within 5 years, they went from being almost out of town in the laughing stock of baseball back to a championship team in 90, 91, 92. They won the National League East, and Jim had a lot to do with it. The three most important people, I think, in that turnaround were Jim, Barry Bonds, and the original general manager, Sid Thrift, who left after the 88 season. Those were the three who really were the key architects to that turnaround and the catalyst.
I love the, back to Manny Sangian for a second, Steve Blass once said, you know, about how just a great person and warm energy. And then he said, the only problem is I have no idea what he's saying, but he looks really happy about it. That's a beautiful thing. Johnny Baseball, John Pirano, read all about it, Pittsburgh Baseball Now. Always appreciate your time, John. And by the way, that series win helped from the practical side. You got the Cubs in town this week. And then odds, your odds on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being highly likely of the Pirates getting to the postseason.
Yeah, that 10-game losing streak kind of put a big dent in that, unfortunately. I'd have to say 1.5. But crazier things have happened.
That's why it's baseball. All right, John, thank you. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, Larry.
Coming up, you know, this week college football starts. In fact, it already has started in Ireland, of all places. Florida State lost in dramatic fashion to Georgia Tech. Florida State was supposed to be one of the top teams in the ACC and picked to win it all. Well, that's over now. But the NFL gives it up to college football this weekend.
It's the one they don't dominate now.
It's about the only holiday where they don't have something going on. So the end of the preseason mercifully ended for the Steelers on Saturday. Not that wins and losses matter at all in preseason. We've learned that. But 0-3, we saw some flashes with Russell Wilson leading the team on a drive for a touchdown to open the game. And then Justin Fields came in and he led the team on a touchdown drive, and then they brought in Kyle Allen, the third-string quarterback.
If only what we saw would automatically translate into the regular season, but we learned our lesson last year not to do that.
Yes.
And it very well could happen, and I would love to be wrong about it.
Well, I want to ask our fan partners, Adam Crowley, who is a West Virginia grad, Doran Dickerson, Pitt All-American, about opening the season this weekend. So we'll do that right after the top of the hour. Completely unrelated. You know what today is? The 85th anniversary of
Stuff a mattress with me. I'll see you reach the wizard, whether I get a heart or not. Beehive. Bah. Let her try and make a beehive out of me.
Oh, you're the best friends anybody ever had.
The Wizard of Oz turns 85 today. It was released on this date in movie history. There's so many. I love the fact, obviously, Judy Garland was Dorothy. But you know who was originally the Tin Man?
Buddy Ebsen.
Buddy Ebsen.
I was just looking that up. Yeah, it was always on every year on one of the major network television channels. But I can't remember what time of the year it was, but we never missed it. We watched it for I don't know how many years.
It was such a big deal.
Like around Easter or something?
The Wizard of Oz came on. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why Easter. Some reason that makes sense back in the day.
So I have a couple of little sidebars for you on the Wizard of Oz. Because it was one of the first films shot in Technicolor, the sets were really big, they had to use a lot of lights, and the temperatures sometimes got around 100 degrees while they were shooting. 100 degrees.
And back to Buddy Ebsen for a minute. He couldn't physically handle the silver paint that
right.
they put on as the Tin Man. He had a reaction to it, so they had to get somebody else.
Right. It's a great story. The other thing is did you know Toto was not a male dog?
I did not know that.
There's another one for you. Unbelievable little sidebars here. The director left partway through. A guy by the name of Victor Fleming left to take over another production of another movie that turned out to be a winner, Gone with the Wind.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that a great story?
And they thought The Wizard of Oz was going to be a flop. It was not well received when it came out.
And the role of Dorothy was supposed to be a blonde. But the guy who replaced the director, George Cukor, had said basically that Judy Garland, we're not going to change anything about her.
She was pretty good.
Yep.
But the movie was not a hit out of the box.
No, it was not.